Welcome to the Michael Yu Podcast. We have a very special guest, El Presidente of the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver, Ms. Ashley Smith. Thank you, Ashley, for coming.
Thank you so much for having me, Michael.
Well, we're really excited to have the captain of the ship here on the pod today. So, Ash, why don't you just share a little bit of your story into real estate first?
Sure. I started in real estate in 2008, in January 08. I was pretty young. I think I was 23.
Wow.
I lived in Cloverdale at the time. Started my real estate at a Langley office.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically right when the recession started.
Perfect timing.
Well, let's just say I made hardly any money.
Right.
And fast forward a year or so, I moved to Vancouver. Took a little time to think about what that meant for my career. That hadn't quite really started.
Mm-hmm.
And then decided to move to Vancouver, switched boards, switched offices, and been practicing, I guess, full time ever since. And then, as you said, I've been involved with the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver for the most part since 2011. So pretty engaged in that way.
Right. What did you do before real estate?
As I mentioned, I was fairly young. I worked retail since I was like 15, I guess.
Okay.
I worked retail, and I worked for 4 years, like directly before becoming a realtor. I worked for Long McQuaid, where the music began.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Do you play any instruments?
I'm a really good campfire guitarist.
Oh, really?
Preferably not on camera. It's not something I brag about, actually.
Oh,
it's
really?
Just like I like to whip it out and be like, look what I can do.
That's so cool.
But I was sort of a singer, or at least thought I was back in the day. I was like a choir nerd.
Oh, you were?
I was Glee before Glee. Oh,
before I got played out.
So yeah, I was really, I loved music, or I still love music. But,
okay.
That was my passion when
really?
I was younger, yeah.
So did you grow up singing?
Mostly just in school and musical theater.
Oh, okay.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah? Were you in, like, what plays were you in? Were you in any?
I was in Fame.
Oh, you're in Fame, okay.
And I had a leading role.
Oh my gosh.
And it was fun.
Yeah.
And The Music Man, and those were the main ones, and then some other ones probably wouldn't even remember.
Can I put you on the spot to like belt out a tune?
For 9 a.m.
9 a.m. on a random weekday morning.
Yeah, but you catch me like with a karaoke situation.
Oh, okay, so you're the karaoke queen.
Oh man, it doesn't happen often, but okay. When it happens, it's really embarrassing.
Have you been to those like Asian karaoke
places? I hate them. Not right, because I want to be on like a stage.
On a stage, yeah, exactly. You know, they have it at, they have a karaoke night at the Legion on, have you been to the
Legion? When I first moved to Vancouver, the Legion on Main and like 23rd.
Yeah, that's right.
They had a karaoke night, but just as with every karaoke bar, everyone like wanted to be famous at some point.
Right,
so it's
exactly.
Like to even get up for one song. Once I've done it once, I'm kind of like, I want to keep doing it.
That's right. So you want to do a full set, right?
Yeah,
and you like practice your dance moves and bathroom.
I'm just warming up.
Yeah. That's cool.
Anyway.
Yeah. So do you have like a karaoke, like this is your go-to karaoke song?
Yeah,
I'm like impressed, like this is the one.
Yeah, they're not super impressive songs. Okay. I just like to go with ones that I'll remember the words.
Okay.
Especially if I've had beer.
Okay.
So I go pretty like old school.
Okay.
Like, love CCR, Proud Mary.
Oh, that was like keep on version.
Or I don't know why, like the Eagles, Hotel California.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
I know.
That's a moody hit.
It's moody.
Yeah, that's moody. That's like mysterious and moody.
Yeah, then maybe if you're lucky, I'll get into more like R&B.
So, little known fact.
I know.
But you know, there's this thing, because my family's originally from the Philippines, and the Filipino people, and I'm not I'm Chinese from the Philippines, but like a lot of people from the Philippines love karaoke. It's like, it's like a national sport or something like that. And we used to have like this karaoke machine in my house, and then it had like a rating score to see how good you are.
Yes.
And like my highest score was with Karma Chameleon.
I would like to see that. We're going to go one day.
Oh, we got to go. Yeah, we're going to the Legion and have a few pints and same karaoke. Oh yeah, 250 beers. That's why I go there. That and the good company. But so obviously you're in retail, and that's a little bit of a jump. So going from retail to real estate, like what was the impetus? What was the inspiration?
Yeah, behind that? Well, to be honest, when I was at Longham McQuaid the last year, I was more of a rep, so I wasn't like working retail in the traditional way. I was working with schools. With schools and their music program, so I was on the road, and I, you know, they set me up at home, and they gave me my first cell phone. Wow. Like, I was living on my own, and I hadn't had a cell phone yet. I really liked that sort of changing around, and you know, not being in the same spot every day, and having right. little flexibility. And I had thought about real estate a little bit. Bought real estate fairly young. So my boyfriend and I at the time, I moved out young. I moved out at 18, and wow. I think we bought our first place at 19 or 20. That was its own story. But got into real estate when the market was still strong. Mm-hmm. So I don't know when that was. We sold a small apartment that we had made reasonable money for. I grew up in Surrey. It seemed like a lot of money.
Right.
And so got excited about real estate. And this was around the time when HGTV was like really picking up. And I hate to sound that cliche, but I was just watching Flip This House and all that stuff, and thought real estate was really cool. So sort of had it in my brain a little bit. And at the time, my boyfriend wanted to do it, and he never did. Mm-hmm. But thought about it. And anyhow, ended up, I was working at Long McQuaid, and I was working evenings at a bar, like a pub. Mm-hmm. And I had been going to school, finished like my Associate of Arts degree. It took me forever because I was homeowner, working full time, working part time, whatever, doing everything. And I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do? Because I can't go, I'm going to just keep doing this same thing for years, because it's going to take me forever. I had no real direction. So all of those things kind of put together led me to exploring real estate. So I quit the gig at Long McQuaid because it was sort of seasonal. I gave them my notice before summer, helped them with school ending, and then stayed at the pub for a bit and got licensed, and here I am now.
Wow. So what inspired you as a young person to like buy real estate so early?
It's a silly story.
Okay.
So it actually is because of my boyfriend at the time.
Okay.
He got hit by a car.
Oh wow. Okay.
As a young person.
Right.
And ended up with a settlement, and he was just blowing his money, and his parents said, okay, let's do something here.
Okay.
So we basically just, we were already living together.
Right.
And at that time, and in Surrey, like, it actually was more affordable to purchase at a reasonable
than to rent.
Yeah. Or at least on par.
That's what just made sense.
It just made sense. Yeah. So, it had nothing to do with me, really.
Well, it's good. It's good to have, it's really good to have that awareness, like, to know these things. Because a lot of people don't pick that up, mm-hmm. they just, especially at 18 or 19 years old. So, you're pretty much, like, a career realtor. So, you started, in your early 20s, very much like myself and like a few of the agents that we've had on the pod.
Yeah.
So how was that? Was that challenging getting out of the gate being a young person in real estate?
It was brutal.
Yeah. I want to hear the first few years.
It was brutal. So, as I mentioned, I started in Surrey Langley.
Yeah.
And at that time, and especially in that area, the market really slowed down. 2008 with the sort of recession, and I didn't know a lot of people buying and selling real estate at that time, and I don't think there was a lot happening.
Mm-hmm.
But the real challenge came when I moved to Vancouver and thought, okay, do I want to move my business here? Because I didn't know anybody in the city except for musicians,
mm-hmm.
who love them so much, but they're not like the target buying demographic.
They don't have lots of cash in the back pocket.
No. It took me a while to get any real footing, figuring out like, where do I fit? How can what can I do to get my first few clients in the city and go from there? Because I really couldn't rely on my network.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was very fortunate in that I connected with some good realtors at the time who were willing to kind of chat with me and share with me some of the things that they had been doing. Social media was still fairly new.
Right.
And it was free. I mean, we pay to play now, but at that time it was just very experimental.
Yeah.
And kind of got rolling with that and doing the co-listing thing and the open house thing. And sort of buyers, not quite formal buyer's agent thing, but helping other agents. And I honestly, if it weren't for those couple of people, I think that I wouldn't be here now.
Really?
Oh yeah. So just having that sort of connection between starting and like getting going is really important.
So why did you stick to it? Like, you know, because obviously it was tough getting going. Why did you stick to it?
Well, first of all, I was used to being broke, so it was okay. That's terrible to say. Like, I did not make much money the first few years. But I think that moving to Vancouver and actually engaging with some of those people, I saw it more as, you know, building my own business and building something. I didn't get a lot of mentorship, nor did I look for it, to be fair, when I was in the Fraser Valley. A lot of older agents, and I didn't really know to like go to them and like ask them for help. I really had no idea. So seeing some of these younger people being innovative, it got me excited, to be honest with you. I looked at the business in a whole different way. And I liked the idea that you can kind of build your own personality. And so I think that inspiration kind of pushed me to get, you know, to stick with it. And I don't think I ever really thought about leaving. I had sold my place.
Right.
So I had a little bit of a nest egg to like deal with the transition.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I had something else I was going to say there, but I don't remember.
You can cut that out. We don't need to cut out anything. We are full disclosure here. So from 2018 to 2011, you know, were an agent, but then you started volunteering. How did you get involved with? So maybe you can just, for those of you that don't know, for those of us that don't know, what's the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver? What's their role and what are they?
Yeah, so the Real Estate Board, obviously it's a membership-based association.
Right.
So if you're a realtor, you're a member of a board. That's how you get the realtor trademark and MLS, access to MLS and all of that. So a lot of realtors think about the board as sort of, they think of them as the MLS system, really.
Right.
But the board does it. Obviously, we own the MLS as a community of realtors, manage it and like look at the strategic direction of it. We've built the framework for cooperation between realtors. We facilitate some educational things, that kind of stuff. But really, at the end of the day, looking at kind of the strategic direction of the profession in general, looking at what does professionalism mean, and kind of holding true to what does realtor mean, as opposed to just, a licensee kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think we take it for granted, being here in Vancouver, that we have such a powerful and strong real estate board. There are... If you look kind of in the history, you look at other municipalities, other global cities that don't have a strong board. There's a lack of transparency in the real estate business and a code of conduct and professionalism. So, like, the real estate board does like the yeoman's work to kind of maintain a lot of those standards, and also to maintain the standard of transparency through the MLS, so people can review sold prices, and it's such a great resource for us agents. So what inspired you to volunteer to go into that kind of aspect of real estate?
Yeah, to start with, it was sort of by accident.
Okay.
And just purely through exposure. I was at a conference and met with you know, was having drinks, to be honest, with a guy who sat on the board,
right?
And just was talking about it, and we kind of got into a passionate discussion about real estate and the future of real estate, and he just said, hey, you should get involved and volunteer. And I hadn't really thought about it, and frankly, I didn't really know much about what the board was. The only reason I knew anything was because when I moved from Langley to Vancouver, I had to switch.
Right.
Why don't I have to do this? Anyhow, so in the beginning, we used to have these geographical areas in our board. So I ran for election for the West Side Division directors and was elected in 2011. And that group just was more involved in like educational networking, fundraising, some local GR stuff. And
what's
I really,
GR, sorry.
Pardon me?
What's GR?
Oh, government relations.
Oh, government relations.
Yeah. Okay. So like just the West Side, yeah. It's, you know, would have been with the city of Vancouver. But pretty light and more of a committee than anything.
Right.
That's the way I would have looked at it at that time. And it was good. It was really good sort of entry into seeing what sort of the profession's about. It was good to connect with realtors. That really helped me in the beginning of my business, to be honest. So, and then, but I did, there were a lot of, they were called directors on these committees,
right.
That would get really like upset about higher level things that they thought they were supposed to be a part of, but really they weren't. Like,
right.
Not to downplay it, but they were sort of like bake sale type of committees that did some important stuff with the help of staff.
Yeah.
But I realized, you know what? I know my role in this place, but I do like that stuff better. I'm not good at coordinating events. Like, I'm brutal at it, actually. Mm-hmm. It gives me a lot of
strengths.
So it was good to be a part of it, but it made me realize, yes, I would like to be involved in the strategic stuff, the higher level stuff. And so the next year I ran for board director and I got elected. And luckily, because I was probably the only one using social media at the time, because I didn't know people.
Yeah.
So getting elected was tough, but...
Right. So what's that election process look like?
It's changed over the years.
Okay.
But basically, you just have to reach out to membership. So the board of directors are voted by all the realtors in the area. And now we have a recommendation process, actually. So if you're interested, it's really important to get involved.
Right.
Connect with the board development committee, which Michael is now sitting on.
I am
sitting on. So if you're interested, just call him. But that committee can, it's matured, right? So now they can help candidates understand the role better, understand the organization better, understand the skill set they need to be able to showcase that they would be a good candidate, help them learn anything they need to learn. And then they go through a process of potentially being recommended. So if the board development committee, after reviewing their resume and doing an interview with them, they obviously have to be nominated as well. They might be recommended, and some folks aren't. So the membership's still, at the end of the day, you know, it's a democracy, so they have the choice to decide who they want to be involved in their leadership. Yeah.
So tell us about the presidential run. Like, I want to hear about the, you know, I went to school and university with a political science degree, actually.
Yeah.
So, you know, which is kind of surprising because I don't know why I ventured into this.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of happenstance. I was just looking through they used to have courses in the magazines.
Yeah,
in a magazine form, you read the coursework and stuff. All right, that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to hear about the presidential run. Like, what did that look like? Were you competing against other?
But it is, I think, a lot of people, including the members, when they're electing people, they look at this similar to politics, and it's not.
Okay.
It can feel that way sometimes, so I don't want to say that it doesn't, but at the end of the day, so if you serve on the board for several years, you know, you may have an interest in running as the chair of the board,
right,
the president. For typically the succession is there's a VP role that's elected, and it's elected by the board directors, and then president-elect, and then that succession's automatic to president. But really by that time, like, you, the board is really a team.
Mm-hmm.
It's a team, and it's about you know, a good mix of certain skill set. And so I think it's more about who's the right person for the right time. Right. And there were other people interested when I was running. So you know, you got to get up and do a speech in front of the board table, and it's, you know, and hopefully avoid politicking prior to that. But it does happen. But really, at the end of the day, it's not about like different positions. Like, that's, politics are usually about different platforms, right? And that's not really what this is about. It's about mm-hmm. who can provide strong leadership for the team,
right?
So you know, we're all really part of the same party, so to speak,
right?
In a way. So yeah, I don't know. I have been there a long time. Mm-hmm. I was, besides one person, I would probably have been there the longest.
Serving in the director role.
Yeah, exactly. So I put in my time, I knew my stuff, and people knew that. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So how long have you been the president now?
Just since March.
Okay. Yeah. So like the first 4 months, what have you learned about leadership in those 4 months?
I think what I'm really learning is that it's okay to have your own leadership style. So right. I've seen a lot of different types of leaders, and kind of figuring out what that means for you, like what your voice is going to be, what level of commitment you want to have, what areas you think are important and not as important. Because mm-hmm. Different folks have different ideas of where priorities should be. I think that recognizing that you don't have to be all things to all people,
right.
Saying no, and listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've learned a lot about listening. And sometimes that might just mean just to listen, mm-hmm. not to necessarily like do anything.
And solve a problem.
Yeah. So anyhow, and that no matter what, sometimes you'll never win. Right. I've learned that quite a bit, like with media and that kind of thing.
Right.
So you just have to be comfortable with that.
With the media? What do you mean about that?
So currently, as president of the real estate board, I sit as chair of the board and then also as the spokesperson for the board.
Right.
Whether or not that continues into the future is to be seen, but I don't know. It's just been an interesting exercise going through doing interviews with media and seeing how they select what they want to use and
right.
how they want to position a story. You know, you have to be pretty thoughtful going into these things, but anyways.
Trump was right about the fake news.
You know, it's so frustrating because I don't want to see that. Yeah, no, you know,
So they're the enemy of the people.
No. I'm just kidding. I think that we live in a headline society.
Right, like a microwave culture.
And a short, yeah, attention span. And oftentimes, you know, people don't read the content of right. articles, for example. And so that headline means so much. And I don't know about fake news.
I'm just
responsible news.
Yeah. I'm just kidding about that, I think. And that's, you know, I love the idea of long format. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, listen, if you guys do listen to this pod, you know, we like to go as long as kind of we can, you know, with that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because then you get, you know, the full, you get to see things from the full angle, not just like surface, like just hitting the surface. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, that's a real problem. And that's why I think I love pods the most. I love podcasts the most as a source of news and as a source of things, because ideas can be like thought out and then come to fruition versus mm-hmm. just like hit a beat and then get out, you know? Mm-hmm. And so especially, kind of my learning style is I like to try to get in depth. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd rather know a few things well than know everything like just base, like mm-hmm. surface level. Mm-hmm. So it's that's interesting to be kind of in that position, mm-hmm. Ash, to like, you know, see the result of, mm-hmm. okay, you did a 20 minute interview and you got 35 seconds and
10
this is,
seconds.
Yeah, and then this is what it was.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So without the context and everything that goes in behind it. So
it does make you look at news from a different perspective, like when you're the consumer
right.
observing it, thinking, okay, what else is like trying mm-hmm. to not be so quick to react or assume things.
Yeah. So do you watch everything that you're on?
Not everything.
Right.
I've had one interview in particular where I was like dreading it. No, I didn't watch it. And no? That's fine. I'm like, that's my way of just, yeah. You know what? Like brush it off, move on.
Do you know what's the, everyone's weird. Maybe like it's the way I grew up or something. When I have a, like for example, I've had a few terrible, no, I wouldn't say terrible pods, but I've had a few in those interactions. Those are the ones that I listen to the most.
Oh yeah, to learn.
To learn, because I actually want to get better. Mm-hmm. And I want to improve. Mm-hmm. So like, it's weird. I don't know if this is relatable to you, but that's just kind of, and maybe it's just my makeup. I don't know it just depends on the individual, I suppose.
Maybe, yeah. And I think it depends what it is we're talking about, but sometimes like if a wound feels fresh, just wait and then
you can learn from it. Oh yeah, you can learn from it later, that's right. That's good. So what, you know, we were talking a little bit about some of the issues and some of the priorities mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So what do you find is the, you know, the most pressing and important issue for realtors and the real estate board?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think actually what I've noticed is I don't believe that realtors and the real estate community is really prepared for what kind of change we might see in the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as involved as I am, I don't necessarily know what that means, like what is the profession and the industry going to look like, but I do think it's going to look a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that realtors have notoriously kind of taken for granted traditional business practices being the norm,
right.
Expecting, you know, it's interesting because I'll go to different conferences and you can really tell like who's setting the tone, where some folks are, you know, some conferences are really meant to like kind of shake you up and have you think about things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And others where the sort of summary will be, it's okay, the public's always going to need a realtor because they need the hand holding,
right.
And da da da. I'm like, okay, fair enough, but is that going to apply for every realtor? We have over 14,000 realtors just in Greater Vancouver.
Right. Then you can boss around it. That's part of
it. You know, I look at what's been going on in the United States.
Right.
And in some of the things that have come up, I can't even wrap my head around yet, but there's a lot of new models coming.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a board, like, you know, I don't see those things necessarily as problems. Like, some of these new models are likely going to come into our area and become our members. And you know, as you might know, if you've ever paid attention to anything across Canada with real estate, like the Competition Bureau in Canada is like, they really don't want associations to get in the way of innovation.
Oh, absolutely
and,
not.
Right, yeah, and which is great. I actually strongly believe, yeah, exactly. But I do think that there's business models coming and technology coming that we have seen happen in the States a bit, that a lot of folks up here have no idea exist.
Right.
And I don't think they're prepared to look at their own businesses and make changes. I think the value proposition of the realtor is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's certain companies, for example, where they are just billions of dollars of capital mm-hmm. being put into them. And you've got real estate professionals working as employees with salaries and medical benefits.
Yeah.
And they're doing, and they're not and at low fees. Okay.
Right.
But high service, mm-hmm. like pretty high service,
right.
Consistent service. And those folks, so if I'm speaking about them down in the States, they're, I think these realtors who are salaried employees are doing anything from like 30 to 60 deals a year. So right. they're experienced, they know what they're doing, they're providing mm-hmm. good quality service and likely in very specific parts of the transaction. So mm-hmm. they're really good at like what they do.
Right.
Because I think a lot of realtors traditionally think of discount service as discount service.
Right.
And then they think, okay, I can add my value as opposed to that.
Right.
But if they're looking at this type of model, that's lower fee service, mm-hmm. but pretty good quality, you know, value proposition to the consumer. Well, okay, where are you going to fit?
Yeah.
And if you are one of those agents who has a lower fee, well, how are you going to paint with that too.
Right.
So, and that's just one of the things. I mean,
yeah.
Obviously people know that everyone's online and data is going to become more and more open. And frankly, I think that's a good thing.
Oh, that's I think that transparency, especially with information, is paramount. Like we were talking about hiding sold prices and stuff like that. I never bought into that. I think the more informed the consumer is, the better. Mm-hmm. And I think the ability to make consumer choice more available, so whether that's through technology, is a positive, because it should raise the standard and raise the water level for every other competing methodology of how to sell a property. And so you're thinking about more of a technological disruption, would you say, of our business. And you know, the same thing has happened in a lot of different industries. You know, I think real estate is not the only industry that's facing this. You know, I have a friend that's a doctor, and he's like, yeah, they're talking about having this machine that just scans the whole body up and down, and you don't need a GP anymore. And I'm like, that actually sounds pretty decent. And he's like, no, I think people are going to really want to talk to a doctor. And I'm like, will they?
But that's kind of the thing I try to encourage people to think about, is like, think about yourself as a consumer and what you want.
Right.
Not necessarily the services you want to provide.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing too. And, you know, looking at it from those different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So like Ash was saying, where are we going to add the value, and, you know, and how are we going to improve on what we're doing now? You know, everyone is making their bets on where that's going to go, whether that's going to go in this hyper technological model where, you know, it's purely service-based, based on analytics and so on and so forth. So it really does depend, and I think that is something that we need to be self-aware of as an industry and as realtors, so that we can develop and improve the aspects in which we can provide more value to our clients.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think that's really interesting. So do you feel like, how are you actually talking about it? How are you addressing it? Is it just more for your for a goal for you just to provide awareness, or is it How are we preparing for that?
I don't know how interesting it will be to talk about this stuff like at the board level. I think part of the challenge as a profession is that we're built on like some archaic sort of framework stuff. So we're competing with big money, right? So, and maybe competing is not the right word, but like there's only so much we can provide in way of tools and technology as a not-for-profit organization.
Right.
And that said, we're also fairly fragmented across the province and across the country. So we have like a bunch of these little organizations. We're really lucky in Vancouver because we're so big. We're the second largest organization in Canada. And so we do have some money and we have some capacity to provide certain things. But at what point, even thinking about MLS, like at what point should we think about MLS as, you know, stop thinking about MLS the way we have traditionally,
right?
Because this it's a huge source of data,
right?
Good, solid, reliable data.
It is.
And what kind of partnerships, for example, might we be able to look at? You know, what kind of integrations? What kind of, I think about artificial intelligence, like just as an example, you know, things like through AI, being able to kind of navigate the home buying and searching process, and kind of the AI understanding better than the person what they might be looking for,
right,
and making recommendations outside of what they thought their criteria and scope was,
right,
and expediting that sort of search process, right? And I mean, I've heard of things happening maybe through Zillow, I can't recall, so,
right,
but where there's AI analytics and predictions about when to list your exact type of property based on exact specifics about your property, when you'll be the most successful, what kind of price you should expect, and these kind of things.
Right.
I think that, you know, we're looking at how strategic can we be within the framework we have. So I have two hats. I think as an organization, as a professional, what can we do, but then I also think as a realtor, like, what should I be doing?
Right.
And that's what I think most realtors should be thinking about is, yeah, some tools might come down the pipeline, and when you're engaging with your organization and like electing leadership, you want people who are thinking about the future,
yeah.
or at least are able to think about the future.
Right.
But when you're looking at your business, really be paying attention, because there's no use in building a 3 to 5 year plan if you have no idea what 3 to 5 years is going to look like.
Right.
You should at least have some level of nimble, kind of some adaptiveness in your business plan, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. And I think if you guys haven't, and it's fun, I'm really glad we're talking about this stuff, because this is the conspiracy stuff that I'm really interested in. So there's a podcast with Elon Musk and Joe Rogan.
Okay.
So I don't know if have you listened to that?
No.
So Elon Musk obviously is the owner of Tesla yeah. Motors and SpaceX and Solar City, a bunch of different types of energy-based companies.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in the early 2000s, he actually stood in front of Congress and was talking about how we had to put restrictions and limitations on artificial intelligence. Otherwise, the resulting, you know, what was going to result of that was going to be a loss of jobs, a loss of, you know, and maybe a potential takeover from artificial intelligence of human work.
Mm-hmm.
And so, which was pretty eye-opening if you watch his Congress speech. But in his podcast, at the stage we're at right now with technology, in his mind, it's only just a matter of time until there's some really huge change.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a pessimistic way of thinking of it, mm-hmm. there's a realistic way of thinking about it, and there's an optimistic way of thinking about mm-hmm. it. The pessimistic idea of thinking about it is machine destroys humans,
yeah.
machine just destroys the economy because everything is better done by the machine mm-hmm. than by man.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's realistic, which is a somewhat of that. And then there's an optimistic result of this artificial intelligence, the algorithms that are going to predict human patterns and behaviors and decision making, because
mm-hmm.
the stored amount of intelligence that is happening artificially is going to outweigh the human intelligence that one person or a group of people could actually have.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at it from an optimistic perspective, and that's the perspective that I'm looking at it, because that's even Elon Musk is looking at it from an optimistic perspective, because if he doesn't look at it from an optimistic perspective, there's no way we're going to get there. And he's looking at it as a combination and a symbiosis of man and machine. So we have some symbiosis between man and machine now. Obviously, we're far more intelligent with our cell phones than without our cell phones or access to the internet. So we're in some sort of a symbiotic relationship, which is healthy or unhealthy depending on the person you're talking to. So like this optimistic outcome would be a combination of man and machine working in union,
mm-hmm.
The creativity of man and the intelligence of the machine. So the long-term the kind of hard drive of the machine with the opinions and the creativity of man kind of coming together. And so, you know, if we talk about it industry specific, I think the industries that have the most creativity are the ones that will phase out the latest.
Mm-hmm.
The industries that have the least creativity are going to phase out the quickest.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, like a truck driver and a dishwasher, that type of thing, they'll phase out more quickly because there's less creativity involved in those types of roles and tasks. So those are the ones that are going to be eliminated first.
Mm-hmm.
But if we look at agency-based businesses, even somewhat of, in some cases, like I was talking to a friend that's a lawyer, how the law practice might be,
mm-hmm.
I have a friend that's an accountant, how accounting firms might just be eliminated because everyone can just throw all the receipts on a machine and it just spins out and all the data's done and you're just done.
Mm-hmm.
And it just tracks and does everything for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even need receipts anymore because everything is done cashless. So like maybe that's cash is gone too. There's a lot of, I don't know how all those Chinese restaurants. No, I'm just kidding. But like, so it's like this. It's happening in every industry.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't feel like, oh, it's just real estate. It's every industry, and it's how we're going to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we talk about that 3-year plan or that 5-year plan for realtors. I'm a huge proponent of doing two things. I don't know. This is the Ashley Smith interview, but I don't know why I'm going off here. I'm a huge proponent of two things. Developing professional skills,
mm-hmm.
that are geared a little bit more to the creative side. Mm-hmm. So that's really strong leadership skills, really strong communication skills, really strong, you know, soft skills, emotional quotient skills, EQ type of activities that are going to be enhanced. Mm-hmm. And so really working on those professional skills. We want skills in analysis as well. Mm-hmm. And you want to create good tools for that aspect so that that you'll be able to prove your value well. And also the second thing that I really believe in is investing is, you know, and I talked, we had a podcast with Jeff Poe a couple weeks ago where we talked about investing. So, you know, while the time of, you know, while we're doing this entrepreneurial endeavor, while we have the, you know, the favor and the, you know, the good season to be able to reap great benefits is invest in real estate, like invest in what we're selling. Mm-hmm. And really, I don't want to call it a double down, but really, like, you know, we're kind of extracting money through the real estate market, through the, you know, through the, our commissions and through us as salespeople. Mm-hmm. Reinvest it back into that place because it's a fertile ground. Mm-hmm. And if you change your soft, it's called like a, you know, your kind of the soft costs or the soft aspects of, you know, you practicing, and change that into hard, so that like owning real estate or owning great investment vehicles, that's the, you know, that's the kind of the yang to the yin of like developing professionally. And I think, I don't know if that kind of rings true to many people, but I feel like that's a real direction that we want, that we encourage, you know, in our group of agents to really focus on, mm-hmm. especially now, because I think it's really a great time to buy.
It's a really good time.
It's an amazing time to buy. I'm like so, excited. Mm-hmm. You know, it was not a great time to buy a year and a half, 2 years ago. It was the worst time to buy, actually. So, you know, now it's a great time to buy and invest in this beautiful city with a growing population and a healthy economy, and technology businesses coming in to the city, like Amazon opened up, like, and it just it's really. I feel like it's a good time to really look at purchasing now. And so, you know, it's a really interesting kind of thing to consider. So what type of aspirations, you know, Ashley, for yourself do you have for the industry, and maybe for yourself, and for yourself as well?
Yeah, first and foremost for myself, I've learned so much from being involved in this role and being involved with the board, and taught me a lot about being more strategic and looking at things at a higher level and kind of getting out of the weeds. And I'm realizing now that, like, I'm good at that at the board, and I'm really bad at that in my business.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I have a really hard time letting go and delegating, and that's got to happen soon. So I don't know. I'm trying to imagine where I want to see my business. I'd like it to be something that takes a little bit better care of itself. I want to be innovative, and I did want to comment because I do see this, based on what we're just talking about, I do see a downsizing of professionals in this business. Mm-hmm. I think,
right,
and I do see perhaps some pressure on fees, but I also see like room for the cream of the crop to do really well.
Right.
I think what's going to happen is probably folks who don't know how to add that value, they're going to start moving away from this business. Mm-hmm. That's just my prediction. I don't know. I could be wrong. So what I want to do is, I'm actually looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to, because I think what that will lead to is more professionalism, which is like something that we all want. Mm-hmm. We want to identify as part of like a greater, you know, good and part of the community. And that's why I love Oakwin, is, you know, part of that human connection thing, right? So having a community of professionals that are regarded in the community, mm-hmm. I think there's room for that. I'm curious, I do also anticipate people being innovative at looking at how they charge for their services. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the sort of traditional list commission and then paying the buyer's brokerage is going to be the way of the future. And I also, so there could be different ways of dealing with that, charging right. for services as buyer's agent, as an example, charging for like fee for service, like a la carte. Mm-hmm. I do expect that kind of stuff. So I don't really know where I see my business in the next 5 years, but I'm have these things kind of stirring around in my mind and thinking, mm-hmm. what could we do that's like really neat and unique in this marketplace before it becomes more of a trend? Like, well, how can we lead the way in doing something different?
Right.
So that doesn't really answer your question, but I think that really gearing towards professional service and in our own my little team, that kind of thing is what I'm excited about.
Yeah, I think it's how to I don't want to say cope, but how to address changes, mm-hmm. right? And not really address or cope with change, but to actually like drive and embrace it.
Take
right?
it on, yeah.
To take it on and yeah. just like, because you know that's a certainty, right? There mm-hmm. will be changes.
Yeah.
Without a shadow of a doubt, where are they gonna come? Yeah. We're not sure, but we want to make educated decisions. Mm-hmm. So that we're not lagging behind, and I feel that you know, it's important to address those things and not really dig ahead in the sand, which a lot of, you know, I feel like a lot of, no matter what, you know, a lot of human beings are gonna do,
yeah.
right? And just really putting it out and like just shine the laboratory light on it and what it is. Mm-hmm. That's really great. So obviously you're gonna, so the presidential term is a full year.
It's a year?
And then, yeah. Are you able to repeat as president?
No, we just killed that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm actually really happy about that. I do think it might make sense to have like 2 year terms.
Right.
Perhaps not if you're the media spokesperson though. It takes up too much time. But we may look at that, we might review that.
Do you think that role would split?
We've talked about it lots over the years, and keep coming back to keeping it kind of the same. But the risks are different now with media and with social media. You don't want to risk the sort of put the board at risk, like the board, right? Like if somebody says something wrong or something's taken the wrong way, then what do? Usually a media spokesperson would kind of get like canned or something yeah. needs to happen. You can't do that.
Right.
And so we'll see.
Yeah, I just can't see it. I think I can't see that role splitting because people want to hear from like El Presidente.
Maybe. We talk, this is part of the dialogue. And there's also different things. It depends.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless it was framed a little bit differently. Like, for example, the spokesman was called president of the real estate board, and the actual operating, leader was called
chair.
And
we're talking about those things yeah, as well. Look at you yeah.
because it makes sense, because I think that, you know, obviously with media obligations there's some cachet, and the board is is here to serve the realtors, is here to serve the realtors, serve the brokerages that the realtors are gaining their support and education from. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, structuring it in such a way organizationally that it's going to be most effective mm-hmm. is really cool that you guys are thinking about these things structurally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how does that process look if you were to implement changes? Mm-hmm. Like, does it go through a voting process? Does it go through a referendum? Like, how does it kind of...
It depends what it is, because we have certain things in our, in our bylaws, for example, as an organization. If that's the case, then yeah, we need member votes.
Okay.
So, and that's, you know, in the past we've had things that didn't get passed and things that did get passed. And it's a challenging framework, to be honest, to work within.
It is, yeah. Because voter turnout is like at an all-time... I was going to use a swear word.
You know, people are busy.
Yeah, voter turnout is terrible. Even, I never even got, federal elections, provincial elections, civic elections, the voter turnout is miserable.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you kidding me? You guys complain about everything,
yeah.
but you don't participate in our democracy. It just, like, blows my mind.
It's so tough. I mean, I hate to say, I think that part of the problem is people feel overwhelmed and underinformed in most aspects of life, like whether you're talking about politics or your local real estate association, like they mm-hmm. don't really understand the issues, so they don't feel, like they have the authority to make decisions like that and vote for something or somebody, I think. So it's tough. That's why I'm happy with the board's recommendation process now for right. candidates. That's to help with that. And generally speaking, I think the boards, when they do make recommendations, there's reasons for them. So with anything, you tend to see naysayers in much larger groups
yeah.
than people who are...
Well, they're, you know, effectively, like we looked at it from a different... You know, we're talking about it at a smaller scale, but it's like a special interest group, right? And a special interest group that squeaky wheel gets the grease, you know?
Yeah.
So you have these, like, small groups of, you know... I don't want to call it... But, you know, there's a small, like, very loud group that
yeah.
would kind of control things if you don't have the masses really looking at it with a logical eye.
Yeah.
So participation is so key.
Yeah.
So, and I feel like it was really interesting because Ashley, just in getting to know her, and we talked about that participation and how, like, what methodology would be the most effective in order for us to get better turnout and get better...
It's so tough. I mean... To be honest, there's probably 2/3 of our membership, as an example, that aren't actively engaged in their own business, let alone in the association. So
right.
that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
But I would say that those folks who are too busy to come, those are the ones that should be coming. Because
mm-hmm.
they're the ones that these types of things can, they're going to impact them the most. And they are important. Like, you know, I could, for example, see a future where maybe... the realtor trademark no longer exists. What would
mm-hmm.
that mean? I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but there's these are pretty important things to most people.
Right.
So I don't know. Frankly, I think it's just about like checking in with your managing broker, talk to people who do maybe know a little bit of something,
right.
And just like take the hour to come to an AGM or whatever.
You know what, I think this is just a, you know, I haven't fully formed this idea, but the professional development programs that are held at the Real Estate Board
mm-hmm.
is a great opportunity because it's mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great opportunity to introduce the importance of the board and
mm-hmm.
and kind of its role in our, you know, in our practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like perhaps without being like, that's a good methodology because I actually think that we have to take 3 to 4 courses every 2 years. Is it 3?
It's changing.
Is it changing?
Yeah.
I wish. I hope it's more.
It's going to be more.
Much more. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be more.
I hope it's more. Like, I truly hope that there's more. That there's more professional development. Mandatory for agents to be able to have their license
yeah.
because. You know, if people aren't up to date on certain things, they're at risk. The public's at risk, you know, from, you know, potentially agents that don't have the skill set or ability or the attention to things that are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, so that's a really good change.
Yeah, public announcement. Pay attention.
You heard it here first.
January 1st.
On the Mike podcast.
Your legal update is mandated by council. It's no longer going to be PDP accredited.
Right.
And I'm sure council's going to have other mandatory courses, and we're going to continue to require 18 hours. It's going to be called hours now instead of credits. 18 hours on top of those courses. So, and we've been looking at more. It's a balance of, you know, managing expectations with membership. And that's the part of leadership that's tough,
mm-hmm.
is there's certain things that, you know, you want to do everything, but you also have a membership that you're serving.
Right.
So it's interesting to kind of see that and to understand the complexities of that. And,
Well, I think it... Like in our company, we've talked about it a few times. We take like a bottom-up approach. So
mm-hmm.
we look at, okay, first we look at the public. What's going to serve the public the best?
Yeah.
Well, an educated realtor that knows what the heck they're doing is that is ethical, has great aesthetics and marketing, has great professional skills
mm-hmm.
To serve that member of the public is going to be awesome. So how do we instill that
mm-hmm.
in those professionals? I think the public would want their realtor to have had a lot of training from
yeah.
the Real Estate Board, continuing education, continued up-to-date information,
mm-hmm.
because if they don't have these things and if there's loopholes and stuff like that that you can kind of climb through, it's not serving the public very well in their best interest
yeah.
because they're buying a service
mm-hmm.
and the service is our intelligence, how we negotiate, how we provide value is through excellent service and excellent marketing. And so if we're not doing those things well, we're not really serving the public, which is inevitably the kind of the goal, the target, right?
Yeah, so. It's interesting. And from the real estate board's perspective, we've actually started switching like our mission and vision towards the public, which is in other member-based associations, like some of our peer group,
right.
You know, peers across Canada, they're there to serve the members.
Right.
And of course we are too. But I think that's one of the things that I love about REBGB is like, okay, no, we're going to be a leader and we're really wanting to focus on the public as is best served. And then the member will be best served when the public is best served.
Right.
Right. It elevates everything. Mm-hmm. So we need to look at it that way.
And I think this is just a comment, and I'm not saying this from a, but this is just a comment, like, because most of the people that listen to this podcast are realtors,
yeah,
developing their business, and working at it from that perspective. Mm-hmm. And the course, like, the lecture hall style of education that we're getting right now in our professional development, I don't think is an effective mm-hmm. methodology for, I would say, 95% of agents, because they're more on the entrepreneurial ADD side of the
yeah.
equation.
Yeah.
So like more of an experiential learning platform that potentially doesn't take a full working day, mm-hmm. but is more in like shorter stints. Mm-hmm. It may have more positive effect and positive impact, mm-hmm. And not learning such a broad stroke topics, but really specific topics that are gonna, that maybe are done in shorter form, mm-hmm. that has some engagement in terms of not just clicking up like A, B, or C, like click, and then it's going, oh, where's B? Like, and I think that whole, like, there's a lot of podcasts and a lot of new ideas on education, mm-hmm. and like the form of university, for example, and the form of how things are done and being a very archaic way of learning, mm-hmm. and having that shift and change mm-hmm. to being very different. So mm-hmm. you know, I think that there's a lot of innovations that could happen in that mm-hmm. that capacity as mm-hmm. well. But there's it's really interesting stuff. So like talking about the future and talking about so we're, you know, 3.5 months or 4 months or 5 months into your, you know, presidency. Mm-hmm. So what are some of your goals long-term for the end of your presidency and then beyond?
Yeah, you mean personally? Or?
Yeah, personally.
I'm really excited to look at my business more closely. I've been, like, for example, been meaning to meet with you for
right?
months
exactly.
to say, let's review my business plan.
Sure.
So, I'm excited to commit some time back into my business and apply some of the things that I've learned. I'm excited about, you know, a lot of the folks that I've been able to meet over the last couple of years, and I frankly want to leverage that network a little better.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to sound like a nerd, but I really enjoyed this experience, and I've realized that I love governance. Mm-hmm. So I actually plan to do something else. Probably not in real estate, not in terms of like my career, but I'd like to sit on other boards of other organizations. I don't know which ones, but I think I've learned enough where I'd be qualified to sit on some. And
right.
frankly, it's so neat. And that's one of the things, if you're ever thinking about, oh, maybe I want to get involved with the organization. We have really good governance education opportunities where most wouldn't, because we have the scale and the capacity to do
right.
it. So I've taken courses with the Institute of Corporate Directors, and these are folks who are like high, like at the top of their game, not necessarily a not-for-profit type of organizations, but mm-hmm. people who are CEOs and presidents or chairs of important companies, not just in Vancouver, but across Canada. So I've had such a great opportunity being able to interact with these people, meet them, learn from them, and I would like to be more involved in that way, as a volunteer, let's call it,
that's
or leader.
So
yeah, so that's, I don't know with, like, where, but that's my next step for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once I'm done, I want to figure out where can I put my
all
new,
the things you
learned.
Yeah,
and then and grow from it. So, and it's funny because I was thinking about your
question about what inspired me or motivated me to keep going when I was in the first few years in my real estate business. Right. And part of it was just my youth, right? Thinking, well, you know, in 10 years, like it might be really hard right now, but in 10 years, I'll be 34 and, you know, be 10 years in when other folks are just getting into the business.
Right.
Right. So that's kind of what kept me going, thinking about where I am now, actually. Mm-hmm. And the same thing for this board stuff. I'm thinking, man, it'll be pretty cool to be in my mid 30s sitting on a board where it's all like 60-year-old white dudes.
Yeah. That's right.
And find, you know, and then when I'm 60, like, where will I be?
Yeah.
And what will I be doing? And there's a lot of great opportunities in this city. And frankly, if I hadn't been involved with the real estate board, I wouldn't have known anything about them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, that's such an accelerator, you know, obviously, you know, to start in an entrepreneurial endeavor very young, and then now to, you know, be in governance and be in, you know, one of the large, like probably in Vancouver, one of the largest board.
It's one of the largest associations.
Yeah.
In BC. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And being the president of that, you know, I think there's so much, you know, great like learning opportunities when you're in that role, but also at the same time, yeah, great, you know, future things that kind of come with that, which mm-hmm. is really cool. And you know, it's kind of funny, like, you know, you know, when you talk about your business and you're still excited about that business, mm-hmm. it's kind of cool. There's a movie, you know, have you watched Gladiator?
Back in the day.
I love this movie.
Okay.
I always pronounce his name on Wycon Phoenix. Joaquin.
Joaquin.
Joaquin. Yeah. That was like his performance in that movie was like, it actually like, I don't want to say it takes your breath away, but it makes you step back and like this, there's people like this that exist. They can create sympathy in a role of a villain so well. I always like villains. Anyways, so they, like Maximus, the lead character, was, you know, a soldier, and he's like a great general, an amazing general. And then, but his dream was always just to go back to his farm and be a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not trying to say this is the same thing, you know, being the president of the real estate board and then coming back to what you know and love, which is being a realtor and growing, being an entrepreneur and growing that business. It's kind of like Maximus going back to being a farmer. So a cool thing, but I'm excited about that too. And, you know, for me, you know, obviously being able to work closely with Ashley, and, you know, working with her on her business, but also, you know, just getting to know her as a friend over the last couple years has been fantastic for me. And she, you know, we've had really great conversations that have enriched our lives, my life. And also, you know, she's been so great in participating in a lot of the things that we do in our company, which has been really, really fantastic to see. And when I saw, we just did a like a pride parade shoot, and she was like one of the first people there, and you know, it's just so nice to see, you know.
Thanks. I love Oakland for these things, and actually, to be honest, I haven't been as engaged as I would like to be just because of my schedule. But that's one of the things I'm excited about, is when my time is a little bit more flexible.
Yeah.
To be, you know, I do miss some meetings here and there, and I miss some of the events, and I love them. Like, even though I'm not even participating in some of them, I'm like, that's why I'm here. And so I'm super stoked to be more engaged.
Well, you know what, Ashley, this was an absolute pleasure to do a pod with you. Is there anything, any kind of like shining, guiding lights you want to share with, you know, we predominantly have a like realtor based audience, but there's some from, my mom listens to this, she's not a realtor. Yeah, is there any kind of like maybe one or two like guiding principles or values that you would love to share with?
You know what? I think that one of the things that I've been really thinking about lately is this imposter syndrome. Like, I feel like I totally have imposter syndrome. And there's been certain reasons.
What is imposter syndrome?
You know, where you feel like you shouldn't be where you are, or you're not ready for something that you want to take on, or that's on your, you know, vision board or something like that. I'm learning more and more that traditionally, and especially as a woman, and as like a younger woman, dudes have been going for it whether they're ready or not, like forever.
Mm-hmm.
And not all dudes, but a lot of them.
Right.
Like, I've seen a lot of people doing things, I'm like, why are they here? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And not to be judgmental, but it's reminding me, just put yourself like out there and be uncomfortable. Try and get better and learn. And as realtors, we all know it's all about rejection and getting to the next level, right? So, I don't know. I think just being comfortable with being uncomfortable and being okay with not being perfect. I think a lot of these A-type personalities struggle a little with that, and they want everything to be perfect. I know I'm like that, and it's really, I think, gotten in my way. So, I don't know. Just like go for it. that's my advice. Just do it.
You know, that's a great piece of advice. And you know, on that, really, I have an opinion on that note. You know, actually, there's a couple things. So there was a quote by Steve Jobs that everything around us, everything that we've ever seen around us, the internet, the computer, the mics that we're talking to, talking in, and you know, everything was created by individuals and humans that were no more intelligent than us. Mm-hmm. So everything was created by people just like us. Mm-hmm. And so that gave me a lot of solace to do a lot of different things. And you know, I think it's natural. And you wouldn't be a good leader if you didn't feel that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that you would not be a good leader. You would not have succeeded if you did not feel that way. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think anyone that has done anything has felt like it's just a stroke of luck, and I don't really deserve to be here, and you know, I'm just here, and that makes you a good leader. And anyone that says I'm a good leader is probably not a good leader, or something along those lines. So I think that has contributed, but at the same time, to have that boldness and that braveness and that ability to just dive into a deep water is, you know, makes life an adventure. Mm-hmm. And makes life, so there's a yogi / philosopher, I don't know, and if you guys haven't, you can watch him on YouTube and stuff like that. His name is Sadhguru. It's Sadhguru, and he talks about suffering and joy. Mm-hmm. And doing things and every how heaven is actually an internal thing. Mm-hmm. And so, but you can make heaven or hell depending on what you want, and it's all done internally, and it's really cool. So like, I encourage you guys to listen to that, and thank you so much, Ashley, for being part of the pod. I can't believe an hour went by so quick. I could have done this for like 4 hours with you. So thank you so much for being part of the pod.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast with Ashley Smith, president of the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver. Do me a favor. If you like this podcast, please rate it 5 out of 5 or 10 out of 10, whatever it is on the rating program that you listen to the pod in, and write me a little comment about what you thought about the pod too. That'd be really fantastic. Until next time, thank you, Ashley, for being part of the pod.
Thank you.